Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Nun Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Nun Beis. The Gemara opens up with a quote from the Mishnah that was on Daf Nun Amid Beis, where it told of an incident of a man who saw five women. Amongst the five women were two sisters, and he was a Shemitah year, and he gathered a basket full of figs from trees that belonged to the women. And because it was a Shemitah year, so the figs were considered his. He was zoiche in them, and as a result, he was able to offer that as marriage money to the women. So the Gemara concludes from that incident, which we turn to our text, with a conclusion of four halachas. Actually, before we begin the Gemara itself, you might have already noticed diamonds that appear, three of which are regular diamonds. Number four, you'll notice, is a dashed diamond. On the side of the Gemara, we have a mivneh, structural note, which says, Maskonois hilchatiois, legal conclusions, shehisik rav, mishnah, saying that rav draws from our mishnah. The Gemara. Maisa b'chomesh noshim, Omar Rav, Shma mino mimas nisen. We conclude from our Mishnah Arba, four maskonas, four conclusions. V'nokit Rav biyodei tlas, and three of them Rav actually takes a stand regarding the fourth point. Rav does not take a stand on it. In other words, the Mishnah provides, we'll say, the basis for reaching a conclusion on a fourth point, but Rav himself doesn't take a stand on which conclusion to accept. We'll dwell on that when we get to it. So the Gemara continues. Shma mina, from the incident of the man with the five women and the basket of figs, we conclude Hamakadish Beperos Shvias Mikudeshes. One who offers Shemitah fruits that grew during the sabbatical year, is able to use them for marrying a woman. And one should not think that, since the Pasuk says regarding Shemitah, it says L'ochla, that the fruits of the sabbatical year are for your eating. One might have thought that eating means literally your own eating, and you can't do anything else with it. You can't marry a woman with those fruits. So Rav concludes from the Mishnah, you see, that the kiddushin offered to the women was effective, even though it was using sabbatical year fruits. So he concludes that one can marry a woman with presenting her sabbatical year fruits. Of course, she'll then eat them. One isn't allowed to use sabbatical year fruits for anything other than that which they were designed. So if they're figs which are designed for people eating, that's what she'll do with it. So we're still maintaining the spirit of the Torah, which says le'ochla, to eat it. Number two, Ushma mino, kitsho begezel eino mikudeshes, afilu begezel dida. We conclude that one who would use a stolen item to marry a woman, it would not be effective, even if the item stolen was stolen from the woman herself. Why do we say even if it's her own? So Rashi points out that you should not think from the fact that a woman accepts an item stolen from her own item, and she accepts it as kiddushin money, as an offering of marriage, that represents her forgiving of the theft, of her foregoing the debt owed to her because the item was stolen, not so. It still would not work. The Gemara continues, Mimai, from where do you see in the Mishnah that Mekadesh Begezel Eina Mekudeshes, that marrying someone with a stolen item would not be effective? Midikotoni, it said in the Mishnah, Shelohem Hoysa, Vishel Shviyas Hoysa, the figs that this man had gathered to offer them in marriage were actually fig trees that belonged to the women. And the Mishnah added, it happened to be a Shemitah year. Taimo de Shviyas. The reason the marriage was effective is because it was the Shemitah year, the Hefgerhu. Because during the Shemitah year, during the sabbatical year, all produce that grows is considered unowned. It's Hefger. And therefore he had a right to it. Ha de Shar Shnei Shavua. If it were during the other, Shnei means years of Shavua, the sabbatical cycle, the other six of the 7 years, the other 6 years people own their produce. Lo, it would not have been effective. So only because it was a Shemitah year and Hemt and Hefker was he able to marry them with it. Otherwise it would have been Gezel and the marriage would not have been effective. Ushma Mino, a third conclusion, Isha Nasis Shliach Lechaverta. Vafilu B'mokom Shenasis Lo Tzara. First we'll work backwards here. What does it mean, Nasis Lo Tzara? Tzara is a situation of two women or more being married to the same man. The word tzara means pain and suffering. It's not a pleasant situation for a woman to be a co-wife with another woman. Nevertheless, we saw in our Mishnah that the fellow offered the basket of figs, that when he offered it, one of the five women took the basket on behalf of all of them, on behalf of the others as well. So she was willing to enter a marriage situation along with other women. And that's what this conclusion is saying, that a woman becomes a shliach, she becomes an agent for her fellow woman. Even in a situation where the agency is going to result in the two of them or all of them becoming co-wives. The idach mahi. What's the fourth area of law that is alluded to by the Mishnah? We mentioned before that Rav is not going to take a stand on it, but what's that fourth area? Kiddushin Shein Misurin Labia. It's the matter concerning this is a sukkah that we dealt with in our most recent shiurim, a marriage that cannot that will not culminate in the ability to have intimacy. The ability to have intimacy in this sukkah of Kiddushin Shein Misurin means in a halachic sense. If you recall, in the Mishnah there were five women, and two of them were sisters. The marriage to two sisters is not acceptable. A man cannot be married to two sisters. Is there the need for a get in a case like that? Well, that we saw was a machlokes, Abaye and Rava. So the Mishnah itself, when it ruled Ein Achoyos Mekudoshos, the Mishnah ruled that the sisters in that case were not married. They're not, the marriage does not take hold. And that's a function of Kiddushin Shein Misurin Labia. The Gemara asks V'nech Sheva, why doesn't Rav consider that and offer a conclusion on the matter? The answer is Mishum de Mesafka Le, Rav is in doubt, I Kabaya I Karova. Should we conclude like Abaye or like Rava? Abaye and Rava were arguing what would be if he had presented or stated his marriage offer that I'm marrying one of them without specifying which one. Everyone agrees that if you were to marry two sisters simultaneously, that does not work. But what happens if you want to offer the marriage in that fashion, as we just said, one of them, without specifying which one? So Abaye and Rava argue, is that going to result in the need for a divorce, which would indicate that a marriage took hold, we just don't know to which one? Or do you say, no need whatsoever? Let's now take a look at Rashi. The first line under the Gemara text, where the Gemara asked, V'nechsheveh, Rashi says, V'nechsheveh Rav Nami Laha, why doesn't Rav consider this as well in the conclusions that one can reach regarding that, what that which the Mishnah teaches? So why doesn't Rav consider this one? V'amai lo nokat biyode elatlas, why did Rav teach as part of his tradition only three conclusions, and as part of his tradition he didn't teach this fourth point? Ha nami shamas mina, this too we could have concluded the kedushin shem esurin lebialo havu kedushin, that a marriage that will not culminate in intimacy is not a marriage. The Gemara, so Rashi continues, Misafkale, Rav had a doubt. Ike Abaye, Demuki lo bevas achas. The Mishnah that said, Einu achayus mikudoshois, he, Abaye said, the Mishnah is talking about a case where he married them at once, I mean simultaneously. And regarding that case, the Mishnah says, well, if you marry the two women simultaneously, the two sisters, that is, there's no kedushin. And then you would infer, ha kidesh achas mehen. However, if you would have offered marriage to one of the two sisters without specifying mikudeshes, the marriage would have taken hold, v'afagav delo piresh, even though he had not specified, ushma mino havu kedushin. And in such a case, you would conclude that kedushin shein misurin lebia is a marriage. If you attempt to marry one of two sisters without specifying which one, so you can't have intimacy with one of them because she might be the sister of the one that's actually married to you. But if you were to learn like Abaye, saying that if you had offered marriage to one of them, there is kiddushin, that means kiddushin shei mesurin bia hava kiddushin, which was Abaye's point of view. And as a result of hava kiddushin, you would have to give a get to both of them. On the other hand, v'karava, Rav was in doubt. Maybe we should learn the Mishnah like Rava, the Muki. The Rava set up the Mishnah b'shelo kidesh elo achas. According to Rava's approach, his offer of marriage was to one of them. Ulahachi Yama Rav Shma Mino Mimasnisen Arba. And that's why Rav said, from our Mishnah you can conclude four. Devadai Kidushin Shalonimsu Lubia Nami Shamina Mino. The Mishnah provides the grounds for discussing or for ruling on this matter. But Rav didn't have the clarity or the tradition. Hey, minayu shamas mino. Which conclusion should I reach regarding kedushin shalom in Rabia? I have a kedushin, I lo have a kedushin. And that's now we've been explaining the Gemara all along, that there were four topics that one could conclude regarding the Mishnah, but only three of them Rav had a final tradition on. The fourth one he didn't include in his list of conclusions because he, as we just said, did not have sufficient clarity in how to conclude it. We continue in the Gemara. Kisolik Rabbi Zera Omra Loha Shmaitzo Kameda Rabbi Yochanan. When Rabbi Zera left Bovel and came to Eretz Yisrael, Solik means he went up to Eretz Yisrael. He met with Rabbi Yochanan, and he said over this teaching, namely, Kitsha Begezel Eina Mekudeshes. Yet marrying a woman with stolen items is not a marriage. Omar Le, Rabbi Yochanan, upon hearing this, said, Mi Omar Rav Hochi? Would Rav have said such a thing? I should have mentioned Rabbi Zera quoted Rav, namely the teaching we had above, and amongst the things he said was Kitsha Begezai Megadeshes, and that drew out of Rabbi Yochanan the reaction, would Rav have said that? Now, that gives us the feeling that Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. So the Gemara says, that's not the case though. For who, Omar? And Rabbi Yochanan himself didn't say that Kitsha Begezel Eino Mekudeshes, Vomer Rabbi Yochanan. Gozav lo nisyashua bailim. A person who stole something from an owner, and the original owner has not given up hope of getting it back. Shneim Einom Yecholim Lahaktish. The thief, as well as the owner, cannot sanctify that item. The thief can't sanctify it, can't dedicate it to the basement because it's not his. The owner can't sanctify because it's not in his domain. What do we see from here? We see that which you stole is not yours. And just like you can't sanctify to the Beis HaMikdash, it's not yours with which to marry a woman either. So what's Rabbi Yochanan all amazed at upon hearing Rav's ruling that Kitsha Begezel Eina Mekudeshes? The Gemara answers, Hachi Ka'omar Lei. What Rabbi Yochanan was saying to Rabbi Zera was, Mi Omar Rav Kavosi. He was very proud, if you will, in Rav saying the same thing. So he said, did Rav say like me? The Gemara, though, continues with a challenge. Meisve, Kitsha Begezel, Bechomas Ubegneva. Here we're quoting from a Tanaic source that was taught earlier in the Masech Nadaf, Yud Gimel. A man tries to marry a woman with different forms of stolen items. Gezel, Chomas, Geneva. We dashed underline Gezel because that's what we want to focus on. There are different forms of theft that are mentioned here. Oy Shechotav Sela Miyoda Vikitsha, or the thief grabbed a coin from the girl's hand, from the woman's hand herself, and used that to marry her. Mekudeshes, she is married. Now, notice we've dashed on the line. Gezel, Mekudeshes. That's against what we said above. The Gemara answers, Hosam Begezel Didab. The Resha that says, Kitsha Begezel, that it's effective, is something that is her own. He stole it from her, and her taking of it shows that she is Moicheles, that she's forgiving on the item. And hence it becomes like his in order for him to use it as kesef kiddushin. The Gemara asks, and you'll notice we have a triangle marking, and on the side under the Mivneh heading, Shtei Kushios al Tshuvas HaGemara, two questions on the Gemara's answer that said Hosam Begezel Dida, that source was talking about an item stolen that belonged to her. So that up till now we've explained the Resha as referring to something stolen from her and not a general an item of general theft. So the Gemara asks, Ha Midekotoni Seifa. The very frame section we read has at the end of it, Oy Shechotav Sela Mishela, or the word Miyoda, or he grabbed a coin from the woman herself. So when the source makes reference to something stolen from her, it says so at the end of the source. So the dashed underlined Begezel at the beginning of the source is obviously referring to something else, to general theft. So the Gemara is saying that Michlau Dereisha Begezel Di Almaskinon, from the fact that the Seifa speaks about something stolen from her, indicates that the Reisha is Gezel Di Almas, stolen from others. And nevertheless, she is married with it. thereby reinstating the question on Rav. The Gemara responds, Pirushei ka meforesh. The entire source is dealing with something stolen from her. And in the meantime, that's supposedly going to put our minds at rest. How does the whole source deal with something stolen from her? Because Pirushei ka meforesh means that the end of the source is really an elucidation of that which was at the beginning of the source. Namely, we read on, Kitsha begezel, Bechomas ubegineva ketzad. What is an example of stealing that works in marrying her? Kegon shechotav selam yoda v'kidshabo. An example would be he stole a coin from her and used it to marry her. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Gemara is asking, does that mean that everything is smooth riding for Rav? Now, use your arrows of navigation. You see to the immediate right-hand side of your Gemara text an arrow indicating Omid Aleph. Look back at the Omid we just completed. There, do you see almost halfway down the corresponding arrow? At that point, the Gemara said, Rav said that marrying her with theft is ineffective even if it's stolen from her. And here you're telling me that, well, if it's stolen from her, then it is effective. So we ask, V'ha masnisin, the gezel dido, v'koma rav. The Tanaic source, our Mishnah, was dealing with gezel dido. There were fig trees that belonged to the women themselves. Just it worked because it was a Shemitah year, but otherwise we said it would not have worked. V'koma Rav, Eino Mekudeshes. And Rav says she would not be married. So by explaining this Tanaic source of Kitsha Begezel B'chomos that we quoted from Daf Yud Gimel and saying, well, the reason it works is because it's hers, that still presents a problem for Rav. Rav said that even if it's hers, she would not be married. Lo kashya. Even so, there's no problem. Ha de shadich, ha de lo shadich. The word shadich, shiduchin, we've seen already several times in the Masechta, and it has to do with discussions between the couple before they got married. Discussions dealing with their possibility of getting married. Are we fit for each other? Do we have common goals? How are you going to support us, etc.? Speaking about marriage. So in a case where there was marriage talk between them beforehand, and then he stole something from her and she accepted it as marriage, that is what the source from Daf Yud Gimel is talking about. Of Kitsha Begezel, even if it's Gezel Dido, she would be married. Ha Dalo Shadich, if there was no discussion, so then that's what Rav was mentioning before, when he said she would not be married, even if it is Gezel Dido. And by the way, this explanation of Shadich, you will find if you look back on Daf Yud Gimel, had been mentioned there. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a mivne, a structural note, which reads, Gimel Maisim, three incidents, Hakshurim L'Kiddushin Begezel. The common theme behind them is an attempt of marrying through offering a stolen item. The Gemara, third line from the top, Hahi Itzop Davikomashia Kara B'Meshichlo Demaya. There was a woman who was washing her feet. Mashia is washing Kara feet in a mishichla, in a basin of maya, of water. Also, hahu gavro, a man came along, chotaf zuzi mechavrei, grabbed some coins from his friend, fishoda lo, and he threw it at her, omar lo, and before doing so he said, mekachisli, would you be married to me? Also, Gavro Lekame de Rava. And the man came to Rava, Omar and Rava said, "Less the chosh laha de Rabbi Shimon." There are none that consider the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. The Omar, Rabbi Shimon had said, "Stam gzela yeush bailam have," that a standard theft assumes that the original owner gave up hope. And since we don't assume that the original owner gave up hope, the stolen coins are not going to be considered the thief's. And hence, the thief was not offering anything of his to the woman. And hence, no marriage. Hahu arisa de kodesh bemuzi de shamchi. There was a sharecropper who married a woman with a handful, muzi, a handful of shamchi, of onions. Also, lekame de Rava. The case came to Rava. The sharecropper came to Rava, Omar Lay, and Rava said, man acholcha. The word acholcha, maybe you can see the root of the word resembling mechila. Who relinquished their ownership of these little onions unto you? In other words, a handful of onions held by a sharecropper indicates to us that it's not onions that were part of the percentage that a sharecropper gets in a harvest. In a moment, we'll see in the Gemara that when produce is divided out, depending on what the nature of the vegetation is, specifically in the case of onions, the division takes place with bundles of onions, what's called a aguda, where they're bunched together, tied together. And that was not the case here. This sharecropper was holding a handful of onions, indicating, as we just said, that that wasn't part of his portion. And hence, Rava was saying, those aren't your onions with which to offer marriage to a woman. You can't marry a woman with offering her something that's not yours. V'hani mili b'muza. What we just said is with a handful of onions. Avol kisha, kisha Rashi says aguda. That's where you would tie clusters together. And there was a standard size when making clusters of onions. So if the sharecropper had offered the woman a cluster of onions, then Motzi Omar, the sharecropper, could have said, Motzi Omar Le, he could have said to Rava, Ano Shakli Kisha Shokil At Kisha. I should say, let me correct myself, Rava could have said to, that is the Oris, the sharecropper, could have said to the Balabayas, I'm taking a Kisha, a cluster, you take a cluster. In other words, as we said, that's the way they were divided out. One for me, one for you. One for me, one for you. If that was the arrangement, it could have been one for me, two for you. But as we said, we were emphasizing here that was the normal way of dividing. And hence, a cluster of onions offered by a sharecropper to a woman in marriage, we would have been able to assume belonged to the sharecropper and hence a legitimate marriage. But not so in the case of a handful of onions. Hahu sarsaya dekodesh befruma deshichra. A sarsaya is a beer manufacturer. Beer was made most often in the Gemara's times. I should say Gemara references to beer was using dates as the basis of the beer. So we have a beer maker that the Kodesh that married a woman using Fruma de Shichra. There are different commentaries as what Fruma de Shichra is. If I'm not mistaken, if you look in the Tesis Rihazokin, which we're not going to do right now, but he has three explanations. Rashi's explanation is actually clearer in the Tosfos Riyot HaZaken, who quotes the Rash, which you can assume is Rebbe Shlomo, that's Rashi, which refers to the dates after the, let's say, first batch of beer was made. There's date residue. And that's the Pruma de Shichra. Rashi has a girsa Pruzma de Shichra. The practice was that you would have an owner of dates. He may have had a date grove of dates, date palms, and a beer maker was hired. And the profits would be split between them. The story that we just read involved the beer maker. He's basically a hired hand for the making of the beer. The materials, the dates specifically, belong to the owner, not to the hired hand. Asa more de shichra, the owner of the beer came, ashkeche, and found this beer maker, and he noticed that the beer maker offered a woman the date debris as marriage, as something of value to her. And the owner says, Amalei, he says to the sarsaya, to the beer maker, Amailo tesiv mehai harifa, why didn't you take from these over here, which are even stronger, even sharper? Now, we didn't explain before, and I'm sure many of you were wondering, what in the world is date debris good for anyway? How could you offer something of no value to the woman and she'd be married? The answer to that is, that's an incorrect assumption. Date debris, after the, say, first batch of beer is made and you poured off the liquid content, you could recycle, so to speak, or make another batch by pouring more water over the date residue. So the owner came along and said, as far as date residue is concerned, I've got some better quality stuff over here. Why didn't you take from that? Also, lekamei de Rava. So this case came to Rava. And we want to know, is the marriage legitimate here or not? The reaction of the owner when he says, you know, hey, you could have taken from better stuff. Does that indicate that the owner is basically satisfied with that which happened, but you could have given her even better stuff? Omar Rava said, Lo omru klach etzel yafois, elo le'inyin truma bilvad. The reaction on the part of an owner of produce, why didn't you take from the better stuff, speaking to a second party, an agent, if you will, that is of, let's say, reveals acceptance on the part of the owner. In other words, you know, what you did is okay, but you could have taken from even better stuff. That approach as being, we'll say, acceptance is something that has relevance only with regard to truma tithing. And that will be illustrated within the bracketed section. But if we skip the bracketed section momentarily, we continue reading Avol Hocha. But in this case, where the owner saw what was done, and he says to the beer maker who offered the date residue, and he said, why didn't you take from the better stuff, from the sharper stuff, which would have made even a better quality beer? Mishum kisufa hu diavad v'eino mikudeshes. His reaction was one out of embarrassment. In other words, the owner really wanted to say, you low-life thief that I thought I could rely on. why did you use my date debris to begin with? He was embarrassed to say that. So he rather said, why don't you take from the better stuff in a most sarcastic fashion? And hence, Eina Mekudeshes. What Rav is saying here, that what the beer maker did is simply ineffective. Now, we have a bracketed section to go through, which we'll do so momentarily, but before we do that, let's take a look at the Rashi. Rashi that we want to look at is across from where the brackets began, but in the Rashi, Lo Omru Klachei Tzliyofas, She Yoyil Lami Yoyil Misayot, to be effective. That the statement of Klachei Tzliyofas will be of, we'll say, a benefit, effective, Lami Shenotal Es Shel Balabayas Shelo Birshus, someone who took from an owner without his expressed permission, the Nema, that even though it was done without the owner's permission, that we would say Goli Daite Denichole, that this expression of Klachei Tzliyofas reveals the owner's mindset that he is satisfied. That idea or that reaction to Klachei Tzliyofas, hey, why didn't you take from the better stuff, as being in an expression of acceptance, Elalini Truma Bulvad, that has value regarding tithing of Truma. Taha Litrom Heinomdos, showing us that the Balabayas is acknowledging that his pile of produce was there for tithing purposes. And that which was a tithe was a legitimate tithe. Avol inyan mishenot aliatzmoi, but regarding someone who takes something for himself, like in the case of this beer maker, he took the date debris not as a tithe. He took the date debris so it would be his in order to then marry a woman. And the Balabayas reacted, why didn't you take from the sharper stuff? He said it out of embarrassment. The lo nechsof, avol lemafreya lo nichole. He wanted to prevent embarrassment, possibly the embarrassment of the beer maker himself. Instead of saying, you're a low life thief, why'd you do that? So he said something, as we said, sarcastically. Why didn't you take from the better stuff? Avol lemafreya lo nichole, but in retrospect, the owner of the date residue, he wasn't satisfied. So we mentioned that the idea of klach etzel yofas, why don't you take from the better stuff, has a benefit as a positive type statement, acknowledging, accepting that which was done in the case of truma, only there. And now, let's go over the bracketed section. The Sanya. Ketzad Omru, Torim Shelo Midas Trumasa Truma. Under what circumstances would we say that someone who tithed someone else's produce without his expressed instructions, which ordinarily is what's required? If you want to tithe someone else's produce, you would have to be appointed an agent for that. That, by the way, is a point that we've seen earlier in the Masechta, that we had a Gzeres HaKosev, a Posuk, Gam Atem. And the word Gam was L'Rav L'Shluchachem, that your agent also can tithe on your behalf. But that's where you appointed him. If you didn't appoint him, so can there nevertheless be an effective tithing? Can the tithing done by Mr. A for Mr. B's produce be effective? So here we're saying it could be, and but now we have to see how. Hare shiyorad l'soich stei chavero v'likei v'toram shelo b'shus. A man descended upon the field of his friend, gathered stuff, produce, and tithed it without the owner's instructions. Im choshesh mishum gezel ein trumos ha-truma. If there's reason to suspect theft, then the truma is not a good tithe. Then the tithing is not acceptable. V'im lav, if there's no reason to suspect theft, then trumaso truma. Uminayin hoya yodea im choshish mishum gezel im lav. From how do you know whether the owner is is unaccepting of that which was done, and hence this would look like an act of theft. How would you know what the mindset of the owner is, looking at this as if it were an act of theft or not? You would imagine the owner coming, not just imagine, but if the owner came in actuality and found this fellow doing the tithes, the Omar Lo, and the owner would say to this man, tithing the Balabos's produce, and the Balabos would say, Klachetzel Yofas, well, why don't you tithe from the better stuff? In Nimsu Yofas Mehem, if in fact that there was better quality produce, then Trumosa Truma, then the tithe is effective. The owner's suggestion of taking from the better ones was a real, wholehearted suggestion. And we know that because, in fact, there were better ones. Vim Lav, if there are no other better ones. And that this fellow was tithing from the owner's best stuff, and the owner is saying, hey, why didn't you take from the better ones? That's sarcastic. Therefore, Ein Trumosa Truma, the tithe would not be effective. Rashi across from here says, Ein Trumosa Truma, Dahashto Vadai Hochi Komarle. What the owner is really saying to him is, Im Motsasa O Yofos Melu, if you would have found better ones than the ones you tithed, Hoyisa goes on, you would have stolen them. The owner is clearly unhappy then. Hoyu Habaylim Malakdin Moisifin, if the owners came along and joined in the collection, in the harvesting, and adding to the truma, then that this uninvited guy did, Benkachu, Benkach, Trumasu Truma, whether there were better ones or not better ones, but the owner himself is acting in concert with the uninvited tither, and hence what the uninvited tither did would be a real binding truma. So all of that was to explain that Klach Eitzel Yofas could be beneficial in the case of a truma tithe. Aval Hacha, but in the case of the beer maker who helped himself to the date residue, Mishum Kisufu Dovad, the response of the owner saying, why didn't you take from the sharper stuff? He did that only to prevent embarrassment. But it wasn't a comment or a suggestion made out of sincerity. And therefore, V'ena, Mikudesh, she will not be married with the date residue offered to her by the beer maker, by the hired hand. And now, a new Mishnah. This Mishnah deals with attempting to offer as marriage items that are in the, say, general heading of hektish, of kotshim. Now the general topic of kotshim for our purposes includes not only sacrifices, whether it be kotshim kalim, kotshim kotshim, light level sacrifices, or severe stringent level sacrifices. But we'll also discuss Meiser Sheni. It's a tithe that one separates from his produce on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the sabbatical cycle. Meiser Sheni produce, one-tenth of your produce during those years, one is expected to take to Jerusalem and eat it within its walls. Otherwise, the Meiser Sheni is not something that you're allowed to eat. Of course, there's the issue of redeeming the Meiser Sheni, but that's beyond the need of discussing right now. The Mishnah itself, you will see, has some markings in it. We've used a double underline to highlight the terms Meiser Sheni and Hektish. When we deal with Meiser Sheni and Hektish, you will see that there is a Machlokes Tanoim between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Now the Mishnah. Hamekadesh Bechelkoi. Chelko means a portion that you received. You as a Kohen, when sacrifice are offered, receives portions of the sacrifices. So Hamekanish Bechelkai Bein Kodshei Kodshim Bein Kodshim Kalim Eino Mekudeshes. One who attempts to marry, we'll say, a Kohen that received a portion of sacrifices, and he uses that meat and offers it to a woman as marriage, it would not be effective. B'meiser sheni, offering her meiser sheni produce, bein shogeg bein mezid, whether it's recognized that it's meiser sheni, I should say shogeg is a case where you didn't recognize, you didn't realize that it was meiser sheni, you found out only afterwards, or b'mezid, you knew it was meiser sheni and nevertheless used it to offer as marriage money to the woman, lo kidesh, it's ineffective. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is Rabbi Meir's opinion. Shogeg mezid, it's just not going to work. And this is because of Rabbi Meir's position that meiser sheni is momon gavoa, means it's something that is literally means momon gavoa means the monies or the under the ownership of the Almighty. It's not yours. It's true, you can bring the produce and eat it in Jerusalem, but that's because the Almighty is letting you partake of His stuff. In other words, you're zeichem yishulchan gavoa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'shogeg lo kidesh b'mezid kidesh. So you can see that there's a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir on in the case of b'mezid. And the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's position that fellow knows it's meiser sheni and he gives it to her anyway, she'll be married, is because in principle meiser sheni is momon hedyot, it's yours, it's owned by hedyot commoners, so it's yours, and as such you can offer it to the woman as marriage money, as marriage value. Ube hekdish. Hekdish, items sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. Basically, you're not allowed to benefit from things like that. So the Tanakhama says, B'mezid kidesh, u'b'shogeg lo kidesh, divrei Rabbi Meir. If you knew it was hekdish, and you nevertheless used it knowingly to that it was hekdish, to marry a woman, Rabbi Meir says it would work. However, if you did so mistakenly, b'shogeg lo kidesh, it would not be effective. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says the opposite. B'shogeg kidesh and b'mezid lo kidesh. Regarding this, Rashi tells you that the Gemara will explain. The Gemara says, "Nemo masnisin de lo krab yosi aglili." Should we say that our Mishnah that said "mekadish bechelko," and it mentioned even if it's kotshim kalim, she will not be married? Included in kotshim kalim are korbanos like a korban shlamim, a bechor. There are other forms of there are other examples, but for our purposes, Rabbi Yossi Haglili has the opinion that Kodshim Kalim are considered owned by the person. It's what's called Momen Hedyot. Our Mishnah took the position that it's not. The fact that we eat from Kodshim Kalim, that's because the Almighty gave us the schus, the merit, or the rights to eat it. But not as if it's our own. If you hold like the Mishnah, as the Mishnah said, using the kotshim kalim meat to marry a woman, she would not be married. So, but Rabbi Yossi Aglili has an opinion that would seem to indicate otherwise. Desanya, umol amav Hashem. That's a pasuk. We're not going to spend time now in the background to this particular source, but just a brief word about it. And it has to do with a shomer who swore falsely concerning an item that was entrusted to him. In general, an oath cannot be imposed regarding sanctified items. And if a person would, let's say, have sworn falsely concerning, let's say, having received a sanctified item, and then he admitted that he swore falsely, he would not have to bring the required sacrifice for what we call shvuas hapikadon. And why is that? Because the Torah says, v'chichesh b'amiso. It's only when you deny falsely something that belonged to your friend, fellow man, not something that belonged to on high, sanctified things. However, Rabbi Yossi Aglili teaches in the following source, Umol Omar Bashem, that pasuk, that's the quote from the pasuk, Le Rabbi's Kotshim Kalim Shein Mamono, Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili, that comes to include light level sacrifices. We're using the term light level just to give you a feeling of it. I don't want to spend time discussing all the nafkaminas, but one of the examples of kotshim kalim, we mentioned korban shlomim, commoners, the owners of those animals, of those sacrifices, partake of the meat. In the case of kotshei kotshim, only kohanim have a right to partake of the sacrificial meat. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that if someone was given a korban shlomim to watch, and he denied having received it, and he swore to that effect, he would have to bring the korban that a shomer, the shvuas hapikadon, would generate when swearing falsely. So what do we see? What's the point? That kotshim kalim, as far as Rabbi Yossi Aglili is concerned, is momono, is yours. Otherwise, as we said, it wouldn't have generated a shvuas hapikadon violation requiring a korban, the penitential atonement based korban of an osham. Our Mishnah said mekadesh with kotshim kalim ainu mekudeshes. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, kotshim kalim being that it's momo, no, it's considered yours. You would think she is mekudeshes. How do we know it's yours? So Rabbi Yossi Aglili, we just made reference to the case of shvuas hapikadon. The Gemara continues. Afilu tema Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Our Mishnah can conform to Rabbi Yossi Aglili as well. Ki koma Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That which Rabbi Yossi Aglili said, that kotshim kalim is considered the owner's, is considered momono, mechayim. That's while the animal is still alive, before it was slaughtered and sacrificed in the Beis HaMikdash. Aval achar shechita lo. But when the animal was slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash, then it's not considered the owner's anymore. My taima. Why is that? Ki kazachu mishuchon kavua kazachu. That when the owners eat from the meat of the sacrificed, of the slaughtered kotshim kalim, it's a right that they have only from the Almighty. That's called mishuchon gvar, literally from the table that's on high, do they receive their portion. Daiko nami dekotoni. By looking at the source carefully, you can see this point. It said, hamekadesh b'chelkoi. One who uses the meat to marry a woman, which meat? B'chelko, something that was apportioned out. Chelko means his portion. In other words, we're dealing with the korban after it was slaughtered. A point in time at which you can speak about it being divided out. Oh, so if you're using sacrificial meat to marry a woman, bein kochim kalim, loy kidesh, it's ineffective. Why? Because we say mishuchim gavoa kozachu, it's not yours. It's something that you have only by virtue of the fact that the Almighty gave you a right to partake of it. Shema Amino. So this analysis is conclusive. Tonu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source which has halacha in it, and it also has a story in it. The source says, "Li'achar p'tirosus Rabbi Meir, after the death of Rabbi Meir, Omar lahem Rabbi Yehuda the Talmidov, al yikonsu Talmidei Rabbi Meir lekan." Rabbi Yehuda says, "I don't want the students of Rabbi Meir coming over here. Why not? They are cantankerous. They are argumentative. They're coming to me would not be for the study of Torah, but rather to cut me down in halachas, in, let's say, Torah arguments to show me up." Well, Dochak Sumchus v'Nichnas. Sumchus, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Meir, he pushed his way in, Omar lahem, and he announced, "Kach shonali Rabbi Meir, thusly Rabbi Meir teaches, Hamakadesh b'chelkoi, bein b'kotche kotchim, bein kotchim kalim lo kidesh." One who attempts to marry a woman with his portion of sacrifices, whether it's kotche kotchim category or kotchim kalim, it's ineffective. Koas Rabbi Yehuda lehem omar lehem. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda got angry, and he said to them, "Lo kach omarti lochem al yikonsumi talmidei Rabbi Meir lekan, mitnei shekanta ronim heim velo lumoitura heim boyim elo lakapcheni bahalochas heim boyim. Vechi isha v'azora minayin." Rabbi Yehuda was reacting to the statement made in the name of Rabbi Meir that someone who tries to marry a woman with his portion of kotche kotchim. Now, kotche kotchim, we mentioned, was the high-level sacrifice. We mentioned one aspect of that, namely that only kohanim eat from it. Another aspect of it is that leaving the azora, that meat, if it leaves the temple courtyard, it becomes unfit. The Azora, the temple courtyard, had very strict limitations of who was entitled to enter it. There were those that were excluded. Women were excluded from the temple courtyard proper. There was a special women's section just outside called the Ezras Nashim. But the precinct to which Kotche Kotchim was limited was off limits to women. So what kind of halacha, or I should say, what need is there to teach someone who tries to marry a woman with kotche kotchim? That would presume that the woman was there in the azara, the place in which kotche kotchim remain kosher, so to speak. And we're telling you that even though it's the meat itself is kosher, it hasn't been rendered unfit yet, you're offered to the marriage, to the woman who's standing there would not be effective. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying, but that whole scenario doesn't even exist. So Rabbi Yehuda was very upset at this point. Here you have someone saying something that's just said, we'll say in his opinion, to irritate. Omar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, seeing this whole give and take, he was wary of the controversy, and he said, "Yomru, people will say Meir Shochav. Here, Rabbi Meir has passed away. Yehuda Kos and Rabbi Yehuda is getting angry. Yossi Shosak and regarding himself, and I remain quiet. Divrei Torah Mate Aleha. What's going to be with Torah learning?" So Rabbi Yossi offers an explanation for the teaching of Rabbi Meir, showing it to be, we'll say, legitimate. V'chi ein odom osui lekabel kiddushin lebito bazora. Could it not be that a father who has a minor aged daughter, the man is allowed in the Azara. Males are allowed in the Azara. And a Kohen took his portion of the Kodesh Kodeshim in hopes of marrying this man's daughter. And the father is receiving the Kodesh Kodeshim on behalf of his daughter. So you have a marriage with Kodesh Kodeshim without the profaning of the meat. The meat's remaining in the Azara. Number two. Could it not be that the woman herself appointed an agent to receive on her behalf the Kiddushin? So again, you don't have a woman in the Azara. A woman has an appointed male agent receiving the meat on her behalf. So the meat remains kosher without the woman being in the Azara, and yet a marriage could be imagined to have taken place, and it won't, only because you can't use kodesh kodeshim for making a marriage. And furthermore, what would be if the woman herself pushed her way in into the Azara, and some kohen offered her the meat? Wouldn't that be something you would want to ask about? What would the din be? So that even in that, we'll say, contingency case, the question still has relevance. Even though the woman did something that's not the right thing to do. So you see here that Rabbi Yossi wanted to preserve a sense of equanimity, of friendliness, of peace, if you will, in the light of what he saw was a brewing outburst. We continue in the Gemara. Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer. Here we're referring to a Kohen that marries a woman with his portion. And Rabbi Yehuda says, Mikudeshes. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Eino Mikudeshes. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be an effective marriage. According to Rabbi Yossi, not an effective marriage. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shnei Mikra Echadarshu. Both of them, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Darshan, the same pasuk that says, "V'zeya l'cho mikidush hakadoshim mino eish." This is unto you from the holy of holies, from the sacrifices that come mino eish, come from the fire. Every sacrifice has a portion of it. All animal sacrifices have a portion of it that are offered into the fire of the altar. Rabbi Yehuda Sofar L'cha, the pasuk that says V'zeyeh L'cha Mikadosh HaKadoshim, that word L'cha is U'L'chol Tzorchecha. It's unto you. The Kohen receives it for all of his needs, including the ability to marry a woman. Rabbi Yossi Sofar Ke'esh, the pasuk may reference to the fire. Ma'esh L'achila, just like that which is put into the fire is for consumption, the fire consumes it. Afhu nami lachila. So too, the sacrificial meat is given to the kohanim for eating, and not for anything else, and not for marrying a woman. By the way, this is just a parenthetical remark we had in our shiur earlier today, when we spoke about using shvius to marry a woman. There, the pasuk says le'achla. And we explained that l'ochla means for eating, and it did not come to the exclusion of using it to marry a woman. But here, we're not even darshaning the word achila. We're darshaning from the presence of the word ish, fire. So the word fire, according to Rabbi Yossi, indicates eating exclusive of using it for some other purpose. Certainly in the case of Kodesh Kodeshim, if you were to offer that to the woman, she would not be able to eat it anyway. So that you can see there's a lack of parallel between that and the case of the Shemitah produce, when offering that to the woman as marriage money, she could eat it. Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Before we go on, I just noticed, and I want to share it with you, the point we made before concerning the temple courtyard as being off limits to women, this is an explanation that we took from Rashi. However, the Tosfos, Dibur Maaseh V'chi Isha, takes issue with Rashi, saying that we don't have any source that says that the Azora, that the temple courtyard was off limits to women. And therefore, Tosfos comes up with a different explanation when the Gemara asks V'chi Isha Bazora, when Reb Yehuda asked V'chi Isha Bazora, what is that possible? So he has a different approach. We took the Rashi approach. You can look into the Tosfos for seeing the alternative approach, but just to recognize that the comment that we made that you won't find women in the Azora, being that it's off limits to them, is something that is something that we'll say is questionable. Rashi was careful in his explanation when he says at the third to last narrow line, "V'noshim ein nichnosos lo," women don't go into it. In fact, Rashi himself didn't say they're forbidden to go in, but he used the expression, "You don't find them going in." And that is a possible way to, offer some, resolution between what Rashi says and what Tosfos eventually himself says. We go back to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Yochanan. We continue at the top of Daf Nun Gimel. Nimnu v'gomru. There was a conclusion reached by the Tanoim. By the Tanaic scholars, Hamikadish bechelkay bein kodshe kodshim uvein kodshim kalim lo kidesh. And I want to add, based on Rashi, that according to Rabbi Yochanan, even the Tana Rabbi Yehuda backed out of what he was presented as saying in the source, and agreeing with Rabbi Yossi that eino Mikudeshes. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's approach. For Rav Omar, Adayin he machloikis. And Rav says that it still is controversial. That, namely, that it's still a subject of a machloikis. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that koche kochim could be used to marry a woman, and Rabbi Yossi is saying not so. Now, as we look on in the Gemara, we have quite a bit of structural business to tend to. You notice immediately the crown shape around Abaye. You might also notice that there's a very long point that appears in the Gemara, and a rather long Tanaic source. You can see the long frame section. Within the frame section, you see quite a few diamonds that appear. So on the side of our Gemara, we have a nosei/mivne heading. The crown, simun litzor kesher bein Abaye v'Rava b'Hemshech. So you see Abaye immediately. Do you see Rava with a crown? Of course, the fourth wide line. Your eye is always scanning the page rapidly. Abaye opens up the Gemara saying that we have a Tanaic source supporting Rabbi Yochanan. Rava responds and says, and we don't have a Tanaic source supporting Rav, but we seem to have one that in fact supports Rav. That's the purpose of the crown shapes. Then we have a long Tanaic source, and the diamond is explained on the side. Mekoros sources she'osu l'kehanim l'chalek u'lahachlif chelkei b'kotchim. In the realm of sacrifices, in the realm of kodshim, there are many examples. And in this source, we're going to see, in this Tanaic source, we're going to find, they'll say, scriptural sources that kohanim who receive a portion from various sacrifices, that's a portion that they receive. It's a privilege that they receive, but it's forbidden for them to switch around their portion with other kohanim in exchange for the other one's portion. There's no dividing and sharing and splitting of portions. But reading our note, we said that a source that it's also for kam lechachlif chalkeim bekotchim bein zeh lezeh between one another lefi domim in accordance with value. In other words, I don't like meat so much, and I would say here I have a portion of sacrificial meat which is worth $100. You take it, you like meat, and in exchange you'll give me some of your meal offerings, your menachas, worth $100. So that type of behavior is unacceptable, is forbidden. Bechol shlav mudgash impas eizes sug shel kodesh shemochichim. At each stage, a line will appear highlighting which kind of kodshim, which kind of sacrifice we are discussing. We are proving our point. The prohibition of conducting a type of commercial activity. When I say commercial activity, it's a reference to the switching around and the sharing of portions that you received. Being that we mentioned the underlining, let us look at this Tanaic source, focusing on the underlining, and you'll see the different kinds of sacrifices concerning which we are going to limit the transactions that we just discussed. So the first underlining is, in fact, the example we gave, Menachas Keneged Zvachim, one exchanging meal offerings for meat offerings, or vice versa. The next underlining, Menachas Keneged Oifos, meal offerings in exchange for bird offerings. Oifos Keneged Zvachim, bird offerings in exchange for animal offerings. And then Menachas Keneged Menachas, one kind of meal offering in exchange for another kind of meal offering. And then we have a further underlining, machvas keneged machvas, machashes keneged machashes. That means even within the same type of meal offering, let's say a fellow today is not interested in eating, his machvas type minchas, type machvas type of meal offering, says, you take my machvas today and I'll take yours tomorrow. Or marcheshes keneged marcheshes. Marcheshes was another kind of meal offering, and they differed in their form of preparation. One was with less oil in it, one was with more oil in it. Then there's another underlining. Up till now, starting from the beginning of the source till the last of the narrow lines, we were dealing with the realm of kodshei kodshim. Animal offerings like a korban chatos, a korban osham, bird offerings, meal offerings, all of those kinds of sacrifices are called kodshei kodshim. What about exchanging kodshim kalim? And that's what you see as the last underline. This Tanaic source will be darshaning, deriving its halachas from terms that we find in Psukim, in Vayikra Perek Tes, Vayikra Perek Zayin, Pasuk Tes, and Pasuk Yud. We've included the Pasuk that's going to be broken down on the side of the Gemara, and how we see these things is not really explicit when you look at the words of the Pasuk per se, but Rashi along the way in the narrow lines, about a third of the way down the narrow lines, we've dashed underline where Rashi says, "To kulu kro yiseri ninu," all of the words in these psukim, or I should say, many of the words in these psukim, are extra, because the pasuk could have been written in a more abbreviated fashion, and yet did not do so, enabling us therefore to derive the various drushes that we'll see. Let us first read the pasuk that will be darshened in the source. We've included it on the side, the two psukim, in the margin. Vayikra Perek Zayin Pasuk Tes says, V'chol mincho asher te'ofeh batanur, V'chol naso b'mar cheshes, V'al machvas, la kohen hamakriv oisa lo tiyeh. all meal offerings that are baked in the oven, and all those that are made in a marcheshes, the name of a vessel, used for the preparation of the that kind of mincha, and that which is prepared on a machvas. I think you might describe the machvas as a type of cookie sheet. In other words, it doesn't have sides to it. It's a flat type vessel. La kohena makrivoi solotiyavi. These different meal offerings are given to the kohen. V'chol mincha blula v'shemen v'chareva. The minchas that are mixed with oil and those that are chareva dry. L'chol b'nei aron tia ish ke'achiv. They are given to the descendants of Aaron, the kahuna. Now the Gemara. Abaye mentioned that we have a Tanaic source that is like Rabbi Yochanan. Omer Abaye kavosei de Rabbi Yochanan mestabro. What was Rabbi Yochanan's point? That even Rabbi Yehuda agrees in the end with Rabbi Yossi that the kohen cannot be mekadesh an isha with the portion that he receives. Before we actually read the source, we read a pasuk. The pasuk is from Sefer Vayikra. The written Torah is darshaned, is explained, is expanded upon by the oral tradition. The oral tradition responsible for darshaning psukim, we refer to them as the midrashim, and the medrash on Sefer Vayikra is called the Sifra. And when you have a section of that work without any name to it, we'll say the assumed author of the Sifra, unless otherwise stated, is Rabbi Yehuda. And you'll notice on the third wide line of the Gemara, it says Stam Sifra Money. Who is the author of who is the assumed author of the Sifra, that medrash that expounds on Psukim in Vayikra? Rabbi Yehuda. It's the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda. For who Ka'omar, and he is saying, that's what we'll see in this source, the less bo din chaluka klal, that sacrifices have no characteristic of chaluka. Chaluka means being divided or exchanged portion for portion between kohanim, my portion for your portion. Not to be confused, of course, with the idea of chaluka being divided out. Any given sacrifice is divided out to the kohanim that are in the Beis HaMikdash at that time. However, beyond a kohen receiving his own portion, there's no further exchanges that are allowed. And all of this is Rabbi Yehuda. So if that's the case, you can see that Rabbi Yehuda, in the end, agrees with Rabbi Yossi that all the kohen can do with the portion he receives is eat it himself. He can't use it to marry a woman. That would already be a type of, we'll say, commercial type transaction with kodshim. And the source from the Sifra, authored by Rabbi Yehuda, says that that is out of bounds. So now the source, Disanya, Minayin Shein Chulkim Menachas Keneged Zvachim. From where do we know that one is not to divide or exchange, exchange Menachas, meal offerings in exchange for animal offerings? Talmud Lomar, V'chol Mincho Ashir Teofe Batanur, L'chol B'nei Aaron Tiyeh. What the Gemara just quoted was a section of Pasuk Tes. As you can see, the beginning of Pasuk Tes, and at the end, and the quote from the end of Pasuk Yud. We take a look at Rashi. Kol Mincha, on the second narrow line, Mashma, Shebemincha Atzma Yechalku Kol B'nei Aaron. Let's also read the Rashi before. She'ein Cholkin Menachas Keneged Zvochim. Kefi Domim. One doesn't evaluate his portion of a mincha and translate it into monetary terms in exchange for a portion of meat from another korban. Lomar, and say, Tol ato mincha, you take my portion of the meal offering, Fani chazev v'shoko basar chatos v'ashem, and I'll take your chazev v'shok portion of a shlomim, which is the portion a Kohen receives in a peace offering, or the meat that you would receive from a sin or guilt offering. So from where do we know that that is not to be done? The pasuk indicates that point, that the mincha that a person receives is for the Kohen and not to be exchanged beyond that. We continue in the Gemara. Yochol lo yechalku menochas keneged zvachim. Maybe that kind of exchange, meal offering for animal offering, is not acceptable. Shelo komu tachteim bedalus. In a situation of dadalus means impoverishment. If a person cannot afford to bring an animal offering, so the Torah makes a provision for him to bring a bird offering. But the Torah does not say that if a person cannot afford an animal offering, so the immediate next choice would be a meal offering. So that a connection between meal offerings and animal offerings, you can see, just doesn't exist. So that we exclude. Avol yechalku menochos keneged ofos. Maybe an exchange can be made between meal offering in exchange for bird offering. Sharei komu tachteim bedalus. Because we know that when the Torah instructs certain people to bring a bird offering, and as I say, in certain cases where they can't afford the bird offering, the Torah makes a provision for them to bring a meal offering. In other words, the meal offering is the immediate next suggestion to a bird offering, which was not the case in an animal offering. There, the immediate next suggestion would have been a bird offering. In the case of someone charged with bringing a bird offering, the Torah says if he can't bring it, so bring a meal offering, which is less expensive. So maybe there an exchange between Kehanim Mincha for Oif could be made. Talmud Lomar, the Pasuk says, V'chol Na'ase B'mar Cheshes, and it goes on to say, V'chol B'nei Aaron Tiyet. The Rashi we mentioned before says that there are extra words in these Psukim, and hence we have the ability to darshan, to extract from the verses these points. Okay, maybe we'll exclude that possibility of meal offering exchange for bird offering. Their very nature is so different. Domim is a reference to blood. One is a living and a creature, the bird, and the other is flour, is a meal offering. So they're so distinct from one another, they can't be exchanged for one another. But maybe an exchange of bird offering for meat offering is possible. Shalolu valolu mine domim. Both birds and meat are those that had blood in them. No, Talmud Lomer, that too is off limits, cannot be an exchange. The Pasuk says, Al machvas. And again, we're not seeing this in the translation of the words, and the simple reading of the pasuk doesn't seem to relate to oifos and zvachim. Nevertheless, as Rashi said before, we have extra words that enable us to darshan, to derive these things. When we say enable us, it means there's an oral tradition in how to explain verses, and it's not something that's left up to the whim of any given rabbi, but rather it's a tradition that he had dating back all the way back to Mount Sinai. All right, so yochol lo yechalku oifos keneged zvachim. I could see that you won't be able to exchange bird offering for meal animal offering. Shalolu maaseim biyad, balolu maaseim bekli. And the way they're processed, bird offerings are processed biyad. That means the way they're slaughtered is by the insertion of a Kohen's extended thumb fingernail into the back of the neck of the bird. It's called malika. That's biyat. The other animals, animal offerings, are slaughtered with a knife. Hence the word zvochim, which means slaughter by knife. That's used, a kli, a vessel, then, is used for their slaughter. So they're different. And I can see then that their difference will be the basis of concluding they can't be exchanged for one another. One Kohen giving him his portion in a bird offering in exchange for the other Kohen's portion in a meat offering. Aval yechalku menachos keneged menachos. There are different kinds of menachos we mentioned before, like a machvas versus a marcheshes. So maybe an exchange of my machvas for your marcheshes meal offering would be acceptable. Shalol v'alol maaseh biyad. Both of them are offered by hand. What's the offering by hand in a case of a mincha? So when a meal offering is brought, a handful of the meal offering is taken from the basic vessel containing the mincha and is is placed in the fire on the top of the mizbeach. So you have they're processing by hand. Talmud Lomar, l'chol mincha blula b'shemen, l'chol b'nei Aaron. And with that pasuk, we're going to exclude machvas for marcheshes. So yochol lo yechalku machvas keneged marcheshes or marcheshes keneged machvas. I can still understand why they cannot be exchanged for one another. Shizu ma'aseim rakim, shizu ma'aseim koshim. Rakim means soft or a looser batter. Koshim means hard or a drier batter. So a marchesh, as we said, is a more oily type offering as opposed to the machvas. So their difference will preclude their being exchanged for one another. Aval yechalku machvas keneged machvas or marcheshes keneged marcheshes. You take my machvas portion today, and I'll take your machvas portion tomorrow. Today I'm not hungry. Tomorrow you'll give me in exchange for my machvas your machvas, and likewise marcheshes for marcheshes. Shalolu valolu masem koshim inami masem rakim. They're both. The machvas for machvas, they're both koshim. Marcheshes for marcheshes, they're both rakim. So they're so similar, maybe they lend themselves to being exchanged for one another. Talmud Lomar, v'charevo l'chol b'nei Aaron tiyeh. Once again, pasuk yud precluding that type of arrangement. Yocholo yechalku b'kodshei hakodshim. Maybe the prohibition of exchanging portion for portion is within the realm of the higher level sacrifices. Aval yechalku b'kodshim kalim, but maybe in the realm of the lower level sacrifices, exchanges can be made. Talmud lomar ish ke'achiv. Now this is a quote from that we saw the pasuk, the end of pasuk yud ish ke'achiv, the somech le, and later close to it in pasuk yud beis it says im al toida. Kishem shein cholkin b'kodshei kodshim, just like there's no division between kodshei kodshim, kach ein cholkin, there's no division, meaning there's no exchange one for the other in the realm of kodshim kodshim, kach ein cholkin b'kodshim kalim. Likewise, with regard to the lighter level, the lower level sanctity sacrifices. But in Pasuk Yud, the word ish appeared. Ish. Ish cholek afilu Balmum. Here the word cholek, not to be confused with the word cholkin before, here cholek means, like we said originally, it means to receive an initial receipt of a portion. So when we speak about the receipt of a portion, even a blemished Kohen is entitled to a portion, even though he cannot serve in the process of offering the direct offering of a sacrifice. A Balmum does have other roles. The blemished Kohen, physical blemishes that might be upon him, preclude him from doing the sacrificial service, but there are other aspects of the Beis HaMikdash activity that he does perform. So a Balmum is entitled to a portion. V'ein HaKotan Cholek Fafilu Tam. A minor, even if he's unblemished, Tam means unblemished, he does not receive a division of sacrificial meat. Stam Sifra Moni, a section of the Sifra that has no name. That's the word Stam indicates unnamed. Sifra, the oral medrash that darshan psukim from Sefer Vayikra. Moni, who is the author? Rebbe Yehuda. The who ka'amar delespa din chaluka klal. And he is the one that's saying that sacrifices do not lend themselves to any form of exchange between one another. Shma mina. So you see here that Rebbe Yehuda reversed his initial stance to accept Rebbe Yossi's opinion that someone who would try to mekadesh a woman, give him his portion of the coin in exchange for her agreeing to marry him, would not be acceptable. So Shma mina, this is conclusive. As far as Abaye is concerned, this is conclusive in showing like Rabbi Yochanan's approach. Now, Abaye's intent was most likely to say that Rabbi Yochanan's approach, saying that Rabbi Yehuda finally changes his opinion to agree with Rabbi Yossi, is supported by a Tanaic source. But this draws a reaction out of Rava. Omar Rava, Ucharav, Mi Lo Tanya. And according to Rav, who said that Rebbe Yehuda has not changed his opinion, you don't have a Tanaic source, Va Tanya. We have the following source, Tanaic source. It says Hatsnuim. Tsnuim literally has to do with the humble, the pious ones. Moishchen es yedehem, they withdrew their hands, they wouldn't take a portion. Vahagar geronim chokim. And the gargeronim, those are the hungry ones, the forceful ones, they chokim. Now, the word chokim indicates what does Rava think that means? Chokim means exchange portions one with the other. So we have here a Tanaic source, which would ostensibly be authored by Rabbi Yehuda, his original position that you could marry a woman with your portion, giving it away in exchange for something. So here you see that happening. And this, by the way, we didn't mention, but this source is dealing with the lechem haponim, with the showbread offering, which is in the realm of menachas. It's in the realm of the general realm of sacrifices. So the thinking right now is the chokim, they would exchange one would exchange his portion for someone else's portion, and of course this is a Rebbe Yehuda, even though there's no name, it's got to be a Rebbe Yehuda. Though we're not going to get into the background, but Rashi explains why we're assuming that chokim means exchange of one's portion in the lechem aponim for someone else's portion in whatever. But for the time being, we seem to have a source like Rav that Rebbe Yehuda maintains his position that exchange of sacrificial portions can be made between one another. The Gemara rejects this and says, "My chokim." The word chokim really means chayfim. These gargaronim would grab a portion of the lechem upon him for themselves. Kidekotoni seifa, as the continuation of the source indicates, ma'isibecha she chotaf chelkai vechelek chaveru. It was one of these gargaronim grabbed his own portion and his friend's portion. For yukurinoisoi ben chamson ad yoy moisoi, and he was referred to by the term ben chamson, which be the son of the thief. Anyways, he's a thief until the day he died. So we're showing you that chokim does not indicate exchange of one's portion for someone else's portion, but rather it means grabbing, as you can see in the continuation of that very same source. Omar Rabo Bar Rav Shilo, my craw. What is the pasuk that indicates that that chamson, which was with the term we saw in the source, is a form of theft? Is a loshen of chamson. The pasuk says, Elakai palteni miad rosha mikaf me'avel v'chometz. So in this pasuk you see the word chometz, like the word chamson, in the context of someone practicing thievery. Rabbo Omar Mehocha. Rabbo says from this pasuk you see the word chamson in the context of thievery. It says limdu heitev dirshu mishpat ashru chamotz. Learn properly and practice justice and strengthen chamotz. Chamotz means the one from whom something was stolen. So you see the word chamson has to do with thievery. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.